From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, a Democrat who represents the at-large congressional district encompassing the entire area of the U.S. Virgin Islands. Ms. Plaskett is serving her third term in the House of Representatives, having been elected and reelected every 2 years since 2014. We are delighted to speak with Representative Plaskett as we commemorate this month the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, which granted the right to vote to women in the United States. It's all the more appropriate as we talk about the Democratic nominee for Vice President, Kamala Harris, a distinguished woman of color and Asian descent. According to her website, Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett currently serves on the House of Representatives Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, as well as the Committee on Oversight and Reform. She is also a member of the House Committee on Agriculture, where she serves as the chair of the Subcommittee on Biotechnology, Horticulture, and Research. Ms. Plaskett serves in the Democratic Caucus as a senior whip. She is also a member of the Congressional Black Caucus and the New Democrats Coalition, where she is the co-chair of the Task Force on Infrastructure. The Congresswoman is a co-chair of the Congressional Caribbean Caucus. A former prosecutor, Stacey Plaskett earned her undergraduate degree from Georgetown University School of Foreign Service and her Juris Doctorate from the American University's Washington College of Law. The Congresswoman has a long history of public service, having started as an assistant district attorney in the Bronx DA's office, as well as having worked as a political appointee at the Department of Justice. On this edition of the program, we'll ask Congresswoman Plaskett about her reaction to the newly minted Democratic ticket and the virtual Democratic National Convention, as well as her views on the most pressing issues facing the American electorate in the run-up to the November elections. We recall the words of former First Lady Michelle Obama, who spoke during the convention. As a first-hand witness, she is uniquely suited to describe the weight of the presidency.
I am one of a handful of people living today who have seen firsthand the immense weight and awesome power of the presidency. And let me once again tell you this. The job is hard. It requires clear-headed judgment, a mastery of complex and competing issues, a devotion to facts and history, a moral compass, and an ability to listen, and an abiding belief that each of the 330 million lives in this country has meaning and worth.
Former First Lady Michelle Obama speaking on the first night of the virtual Democratic National Convention. And now I'm pleased to welcome our special guest, Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, at-large congressional delegate for the beautiful U.S. Virgin Islands. She joins us via Skype as we continue to social distance during the pandemic. Congresswoman Plaskett, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Carol.
Congresswoman, before we get into the DNC and what's at stake in the elections, let's just talk about your beautiful island and how it fits in the pantheon of U.S. states and territories which get representation in the Congress. Talk about what your role is for the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Sure. So I represent the Virgin Islands of the United States, which is an unincorporated territory or possession of the United States. We, along with the islands of Puerto Rico, American Samoa, Northern Marianas, and Guam, are considered territories, along with the District of Columbia, who also sends a delegate to the Congress. Territories are not unusual in the history of the United States. Louisiana, most of the United States outside of the 13 colonies, California, Illinois, all of the states except for the original 13, were at one point or another territory. And it was because of the investment and the work of the federal government to support not only individuals going to those territories, but creating incentives for the development and the economic growth of those areas that they at some point or another were entered into the Union to become states. Since the early 1900s, however, those areas that were newly part of the Union as territories, the aforementioned territories that I stated, are in a limbo position. Under the Supreme Court rulings of the early 1900s, the Supreme Court at that time, which was a very racist court, said that the individuals who were living in the territories could not understand the Anglo-Saxon principles of law that govern the United States government and therefore should not be considered full citizens or given the full rights and privileges of American citizenship by moving into statehood or receiving the full voting power that other places have. And so the territories have been in a fight since that period of time. Since the 1970s, the Virgin Islands has had a representative in Congress, Puerto Rico and the others as well. We have one individual each, which is interesting considering that the other states, it's based on an apportionment of your population. 700 or more individuals would get you another representative. So therefore, a place like Puerto Rico, which has over 3 million individuals living there, would have more than 6 representatives under the regular scheme if they were to become a state. And places like Delaware has 1 because of their size. Those of us who are representing the territories have to do double duty because our constituents, our people do not have the 2 individuals in the Senate that each of the states have. And so not only are we representing our constituents in the U.S. House of Representatives, but also in the Senate. I learned very quickly that as a member of Congress, I had the ability, floor privileges, you know, no one but elected officials can go on the floor of the Congress except for select staff members. And when I quickly found out that as a member of the House, I also had privileges on the Senate floor, I make it a point periodically to go on the Senate floor to try and corral and gain support to lobby senators for those issues that are important to my constituents, since we do not have the 2 senators like other states. But we also have a vote in committee where most of the work of Congress takes place. And when the Democrats are in power, we are also given floor privileges to vote on amendments and to vote when we are on committee of the whole. It is only in final passage that we do not have the ability to vote, which is kind of galling when you have legislation that affects your constituents and you're not able to vote on it. We debate, we introduce legislation, we sponsor bills as well. So, however, that voting power eludes us right now. Additionally, our constituents, when an individual moves to a territory or is living in a territory, they do not vote for president, which is, you know, a real tragedy considering that in each one of the territories, we have higher representation in the U.S. military than those that are living on the mainland. And as well, we also give a much higher per capita ultimate sacrifice, meaning loss of life in combat and serving our country, than other places. So as people living in the territories, Puerto Ricans, Virgin Islanders, Guamans, and others, we want the responsibility, hence our commitment to be part of the draft and to serve this country, yet we do not have the full privileges thereof.
Well, thank you so much for educating us on this important topic. I hope we can go into it another day, but it's fascinating and also unfortunate in many ways. Nonetheless, let's go right into some of the major issues. What do you see at stake, Stacey Plaskett, in this upcoming election?
You know, I think that as you are hearing in our Democratic National Convention, Democrats believe that there is a tremendous amount at stake in this election. We see this as a do or die situation, whether that's because of healthcare. We believe that the Republican Party has demonstrated their lack of commitment to those individuals most in need of healthcare support, either through the gutting of the Affordable Care Act or through reducing funding for Medicaid and Medicare, those most vulnerable Americans. And even outside of healthcare, the demonstration of that is, of course, now during the COVID pandemic, where a country that represents less than 5% of the world population has 25% of the cases and the most deaths in the entire world. That to us shows the utter failure of this president and his administration in handling the pandemic and shows that everyone's life is on the line by this. Even more so as an African American, as an African Caribbean woman, as a person of color, and all Americans now, so many Americans are coming into the street. It is just not black people, not brown people, but we have allies in our white and other brothers and sisters who are coming out on the street. We see that it's a life and death for African Americans and people of color. As the mother of four black sons and having a black husband, many of us fear for their lives when they go out in the street every day. They can be doing everything right and still be gunned down by the police, by over-policing in our communities, by guns that have infiltrated our communities, stray bullets. And so we recognize that that is as well important. And of course, our economy. This president entered an administration with a robust economy that was put forward by Barack Obama and then Vice President Biden, who set the country on a course to economic recovery after the Great Recession. And he benefited from that. And now we're seeing that he is tanking that. Through his trade wars, I sit on the Agriculture Committee and see the fight of everyday farmers, our small farmers, even our large farmers, lost in the trade wars and even in our food supplies now. But we are losing, we are hemorrhaging jobs in this country and do not believe that they will come back. We know that 1 in 4 small businesses will be gone when we recover from this pandemic. And 1 out of 2, half of black businesses that have been bolstered by the Obama administration will not be able to recover when we come back. So there's a lot on the line. As you said, sit on the oversight committee. And this coming week, you know, we will be having a hearing with the Postmaster General to talk with him about what he is doing to our postal system. It is a travesty that Americans in other times went to other countries to support them and make sure that their elections were safe and fair, democratic elections. And now we have someone sitting in the White House who is trying to undermine that thing that makes America great, our democracy and our ability to have peaceful transfer of power and peaceful and fair elections.
Thank you for laying out what is at stake in the election. We have to deal with racial inequality, police violence, particularly against men and women of color, health care, the economy. As you said, Mr. Trump inherited a very strong economy, although he claims the opposite, which doesn't really jibe with the facts. We're going to get into all of this in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest is Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett. She's a Democrat from the beautiful U.S. Virgin Islands. I can say that because I was just there last year witnessing the beauty of the islands firsthand. I'm your host, Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to a Twitter follower, Shem Beverton Mukalo from Nairobi, Kenya. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com, or better yet, like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest, Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, a Democrat from the U.S. Virgin Islands. Congresswoman Plaskett, you were talking about the upcoming hearing on Monday on the House Oversight Committee about the post office. The post office is on the ballot, which is rather unusual when you think about it's about as American as apple pie. Very popular and very important vehicle for the delivering of medicines, of important mail. And now, of course, more mail-in ballots than ever due to the COVID-19 pandemic. As you alluded to previously, one would think that a national leader would really welcome the fortifying of the post office at this time. But what we're seeing is an attempt by the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, to implement operational changes, cuts, etc., at a rather unusual time as we are dealing with the pandemic. Now, Mr. DeJoy said this week that he was going to suspend some of these operational changes, cutbacks, which have caused delays in the delivering of mail, in the delivering of vital prescription drugs to our veterans, to older citizens and others. So what are you going to ask Mr. DeJoy at this committee? What are you looking for?
Well, I think you're going to see a range of questions from a number of members, but it's our hope that this will be a bipartisan inquiry. The House will be voting on the floor on Saturday over the weekend. the speaker has called members back to Washington to vote on legislation to support the Postal Service. And interestingly, not only do we believe that that legislation will have a bipartisan vote, that there will be both Republicans and Democrats that support it, but the amount of funding that the Democrats are asking for, the U.S. Postal Service is overseen by a board of governors. 100% of those board of governors are put in place by the president at that period in time. So Donald Trump's 100% appointed board of governors are requesting additional $25 billion for the U.S. Postal Service, which we are attempting to deliver to them, which is being blocked by both the president and by his recent appointment of Postmaster General DeJoy. So we are going to be requesting of him information as to where is he getting the sense that he must, in fact, reduce what the post office needs are. That is through lack of sorting of mail, not paying for overtime, reducing personnel, shutting down postal systems throughout this country. We believe that the rationale behind this and the real impetus and the reason for it is to stop mail in ballots, because we know statistically, looking at our primary elections since the pandemic, that more and more Americans are moving towards mailing in their ballots rather than going in person. Many people, of course, are concerned about the health risk, want to alleviate the congregating that may occur during going directly to the election sites. And so more and more Americans are either voting early or voting through mail. And this is, we believe, is a direct attempt to stop it. Along with stopping ballots from being counted, which is a voter suppression that should be unconscionable in the mind of a president, but even more so may in fact be illegal. What this president is also doing is stopping mail to Americans that need to get that. The U.S. Postal Service is listed in the Constitution. That is how entrenched this is in our American democracy, creating a system that connects each and every one of us, not only through America, but throughout the world, to get goods and services. Businesses are falling apart because mail is not getting directly to where it needs to go. They're having to do refunds to customers. People are not getting the supplies they need to conduct business. But also, as you said, others are not getting their prescription drugs. Our veterans are not getting the services and the support that they need. And children aren't getting cards from grandmothers, nor are families able to connect with each other in the way that they should. And we're going to try and put a stop to it. We've asked for an Inspector General inquiry. We're going to put the funding in place that needs to be done to put the pressure in the Senate and to Mitch McConnell to do the right thing by the American people to ensure that the Postal Service continues to work at the rate it's supposed to, definitely through November and throughout the rest of the year.
Congresswoman Plaskett, just a very quick follow-up with regard to the hearing on Monday in particular. Louis DeJoy, the Postmaster General, said we're going to now suspend these so-called operational reforms. But what about the restoration of the mailboxes and the sorting machines that have already been removed?
We will definitely be asking questions about that. Speaker Pelosi had a conversation with him about this already. We think it's farcical that you would say that you're going to stop what you've done when you've already done so much destruction by closing post boxes, stopping the sorting of mail, unplugging machines so that they cannot be operational, ensuring that individuals have not had the overtime or the amount of personnel that they need. So what is being done to bolster the post office is what we're going to do by passing legislation on Saturday that gives the funding that's necessary to ensure that the post office continues to operate at the level that we need to get us through this, not only this election, but through this pandemic.
Congresswoman Plaskett, I'd like to get your reaction now to the Democratic ticket, Joe Biden, and particularly Kamala Harris, the Democratic vice presidential nominee, what you think she will bring to the ticket from now until November.
Well, you know, I think that it is just almost spiritual what is happening right now. When we looked at the Democratic primary at its infancy when we first began, there were 15 or so individuals standing up on a stage. So many people had thrown their hat in the ring. We could never have imagined that we would be not only facing racial issues right now in this country and around the world, a global once a century pandemic. And I think that the two individuals that the Democrats have put forward as their nominees are absolutely appropriate for the time that we're in. The first one, of course, being Vice President Joe Biden, because of his character, because of the work that he has already done, which is relevant to us right now. Whether that's leading the charge with President Obama's recovery after the Great Recession, or supporting violence against women, about creating decency and integrity in foreign affairs, as well as with those across the aisle and everyone that he meets. That's what Americans are yearning for right now, a return to integrity and to decency in our utmost leader, that being the President of the United States and indeed the President of the free world. And by having an individual by Kamala Harris, this is an affirmation that Americanism is about the continual melding of this country, of people from other places, other backgrounds, that immigrants do matter and create the and continually recreate America and give us that edge that makes us, I believe, the greatest country in the world in history, because we are able to bring in diverse people and innovate and change and readapt and create ourselves over and over again. America is the only place where an immigrant can come and will be considered an immigrant, will not be considered just someone who is there. That doesn't happen in Europe. That doesn't happen in other African countries in Southeast Asia. Only in America, where you become a citizen and you are an American in every sense of the word. And so we realize that we have had shortcomings, both racially as well as in our immigrant population. And having Kamala Harris on the ticket shows that, one, women are important. Women do lead. Women are our backbone. Immigrants do matter. Black people are important in this country. And so I think she is pulling together. And the fact that Joseph Biden has said that he is going to have her back, that he is going to make sure that she is the last person that he hears when there is an important decision to make, affirms once again that America is good and that it is not just the people of color who understand these issues, but our allies and our white brothers and sisters as well. And so I believe that this is an important ticket and an important time in our country. And that's why I believe you feel the excitement that you have seen in the convention in terms of the amount of individuals that have come forward and chipped in and are volunteering their time. And I also believe that that's why this president is fighting in the way that he is, by trying to engage in voter suppression through our post office. And we're looking to see what are the other ways that he is going to do that. I also want to remind people that when Kamala Harris ran for president, that the Russians specifically targeted her more than others because of the strength that she has, because of the ability that she has to bring people of color out and to the ballot. We've seen in American elections in 2016 and 2018, even before with President Barack Obama, that when Black people, people of color come out, when young people are engaged, that change happens. And that's what we believe is going to happen November 3rd when we go to the polls and they are counted. And we see that the next president of the United States, the 46th president, will in fact be Joseph Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris.
Congresswoman Plaskett, you just led me into my next question with respect to Russian interference, disinformation that's being circulated in this country, not just by Russians, but by their surrogates, some of whom are Americans, and unfortunately, some of whom seem to be members of the Republican Party. Now, we see among the people who have been backing the Democratic ticket, many Republicans, whether it's John Kasich, the former member of Congress and governor of Ohio, to the many other Republicans, such as Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania, yes, my home yes. state. But let me ask you this. So it's a broad cross-section of people, but let's go back to interference and what the Democrats and other Americans of good faith would like to see being done in the run-up to this election, because we just also witnessed a bipartisan report about collusion, that is a coordination between the former campaign manager of President Trump, that is Paul Manafort, and a member of the Russian intelligence, Klimnikov. We saw overt coordination. Mr. Manafort gave detailed polling data so that the Russians could target Americans with false information with regard to the Democrats. So once again, this is very serious. This could suppress or somehow taint the voting. What can be done to work against whether it's cyber attacks or this type of disinformation, whether it's being disseminated by Russians through social media or their surrogates, some of whom are Americans.
Sure. Some of them are the highest American and individuals sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, acting as surrogates for the Russian government in their tweets, in their comments, in their meetings with Putin, who is, we all know, is a dictator, and with others as well. But what we are doing is, at least on the House side, we are continuing to have through our Intelligence Committee, through the Oversight Committee, as well as the Judiciary Committee, continue to hold individuals in government accountable, continuing to get that information out to the American people. I'm grateful that a bipartisan Republican-led Senate also spoke to the collusion that is occurring and continue to ensure that our intelligence community has the funding that it needs to be able to fight this. But I have to say, you brought up the fact that I was a government, a political appointee previously, and I worked in the Bush administration at the Justice Department. And I actually have confidence that the FBI Director Chris Wray will do the right thing. This is a gentleman who sees himself as a public servant, has spoken out when necessary, has kept his head down and kept his work in the same way that my previous boss, Jim Comey, did. It cost him his job, and I believe that Chris Wray will do the right thing for the American people and ensure that whether it's through cyber interference or any other interference, that the Russians will be stopped. But trust that we must be vigilant, not only to social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, others where they are attempting to give misinformation, disinformation to inject the minds of Americans, but also directly in our election system by actually trying to tamper with our machinery and electronics to sway elections, not just presidential, but others as well. And so we're on the lookout for that. We are remaining vigilant, but I think putting them on notice and us keeping the funding and the individuals in place to fight this will do the job. But, you know, one of the things that Democrats are doing is that we are continuing to register people. We know that if the Democrats are to win this election, that it must be overwhelming and decisive so that there is no question that no amount of tampering can fight the will and what the actual outcome is for the American people.
Indeed, because President Trump equivocates whether or not he would accept the results of the election if they don't go in his favor. So there is concern and a certain amount of anxiety among voters who would like to vote by mail because they're concerned about the COVID epidemic and so forth. What would you say to voters of both parties with respect to the upcoming election and making sure that on election night that we must be patient because results may be coming in after that? And that is perfectly legitimate in our democratic country.
Well, you know, one of the things that we are really pushing out to individuals is to have a voting plan. If you are going to vote by mail, to vote early by mail. If you are going to do early voting, we prefer you to do the early voting and to be at the polls to support others if you still want to come out. You can text VOTE, V-O-T-E, to 30330, and we will support you in finding out where your polling place is, how to get the information necessary for you to vote. But because so many people will be doing absentee mail-in voting, early voting before the actual polling sites are open and before they close, this may be a very long election night and maybe even more so. And, you know, of course, because of the Electoral College, there will be key states that we will really have to watch. But we are really focused particularly on those battleground states and our states that are changing demographics and voting patterns as well. And so there are places that we did not think 10 years ago would be places that Democrats could win. It is moderate Democrats in the House that have given us control of the House. Those are individuals in traditionally Republican places that have won Democratic seats because they are focused on the needs of their constituents. And I think that's key everywhere that you represent to the best of your ability.
Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett is a Democrat from the U.S. Virgin Islands. Stacey Plaskett, thank you so much for your time, your terrific insights as we look forward to the November elections.
Thank you. Thank you. And to all your listeners, please stay safe and stay blessed.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. Thanks also to Kim Lewis for booking our guest. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.